This episode of Storyworthy is sponsored by Story02 Software from Jungle. Listen, Story02 is fantastic. It's a way to outline and define your story. Whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, an essay, a screenplay, a novel, Story02 Software will help you get that story out there with a beginning, middle, and end. And we always say that's what you need for a good story, an end. There are customizable story paradigms, character image packets, and the ability to import and export final drafts. So head over to junglesoftware.com and check out Story02 and enter the coupon code STORYWORTHY, all one word, to receive 10% off. Story02 by Jungle Software. There's nothing out there like it to tell your story. Your story!
This is Walter Cronkite, and you are listening to Storyworthy. Actually, it's Hal Rail, but you're still listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finn, and we're coming to you from the Ice House Comedy Club in Pasadena, California.
The Ice House Comedy Club, Hannes. Now, that's where I met you.
That's
17
right.
years ago.
That's right, because our topic today is time to leave home.
Time to leave home.
When you and I left home, our paths crossed at the Ice House, as many comedians have done.
That's really interesting you should say that. It's true. August 17th. Now, it's a couple weeks ago now. But August 17th was my 17th year in Los Angeles. And what I like to call my 17th year of freedom.
Yes. You actually wrote down the date. That's amazing.
Well, sure. You don't remember the day you moved to LA?
The day? No.
Oh, wow. I do.
I know. It was right before my 30th birthday.
Okay. Well, I was 31 when I arrived here. So there you go, folks. Do the math. I'm 50 years old.
You're not 50 yet.
I'm going
Christine
to be.
Christine is going to be 50 within a few years, but she's gone the opposite route of most women.
I'm just saying I'm 50.
For pretending they're younger.
No.
She's like, telling people, you should just tell people you're 60, so they go, damn, you look good.
You know what? I think
girl.
You have something there.
If you run into some black woman with really large nails.
I just might do that.
Yeah.
Okay, time to leave home. Now, this topic is brought to us by voiceover artist Hal Rail. Hal Rail. Have you heard that name before, Hannes?
I have. He is a voiceover artist in his own right. He also is the husband of one of our favorites, Maggie Roswell, who was here a few weeks ago.
Right, who was also a voiceover artist. But it's interesting, you don't hear these voiceover artists' name very frequently. Do you know what I mean? I have a feeling he doesn't get stopped in the street.
Now more people know who voiceover people are than ever. When we were kids, nobody knew who. You knew Mel Blanc. That was it.
That's all.
That was
folks.
The only voiceover guy that you ever knew. And then who was it? The trailer guy, Don LaFontaine.
Sure.
Eventually, in a world where
Sunday.
Podcasts rise up like turnips.
This summer. Now, but Maggie Roswell, I know her name because of The Simpsons, and that was sort of like hand in hand. But
right.
My point is, her husband, Hal Rail, is here.
You've heard him a million times, but you don't know.
You have heard his voice, ladies and gentlemen. That's my point. You have heard his voice on so many different projects. So we're excited to hear from him, literally.
Yeah.
And his subject is time to leave home.
Yes.
Now, time to leave home. Now, when I left home at 17 years ago, it wasn't the first time I left home. I mean, the first time I left home.
Yeah, but I think some people think, like your sisters who still live in Pittsburgh, they thought leaving home meant leaving your mother's house.
Mm-hmm.
But to people like you and me, adventurers, vagabonds, leaving home means get me to a completely different state. Because that's one of the things I love about L.A. is it feels like it's mine.
Mm-hmm.
For better or worse, it's mine.
Right. And these are my traditions, and this is my family that I've started. And my daughter is growing up. She's from Southern California.
Right. She'll probably end up moving to Alaska and being like, oh, I can't friggin' stand it.
I know. Sometimes I think, what could she do that would completely make me, you know, turn against her? And then I think, you know, become a Republican.
Marry a guy in Alaska who works at a cannery.
This is not true. She can do anything she wants. Except support Sarah Palin, then we got a problem.
Yeah, then we got a problem. Sarah Palin is going to be drunk in debt of a bloated liver by then. Sarah Palin, there was a video of her just recently. She's talking directly to the camera. She's completely drunk.
Really?
She's drunk.
Oh, that's
There's
hard.
No way.
That would be very... Well, I'm just saying, as a public person, I mean, you know, you have a couple of one or two or three extra glasses of wine.
No.
You think she's an alcoholic. You think she has a problem?
Yes. When I see somebody that drunk in public, I'm like,
okay.
No, you're, well, folks, you don't understand how drunk you are.
You can email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com and
let's
us
get
know
some controversy going.
You think Sarah Palin is, in fact,
here we're at K-Pod. I tell you something, man.
Okay, I want to tell you my short story about leaving home, and it was when I was 17, and it was 2 days after I graduated from high school. So I graduated from high school in June. Yeah, because
nice.
I started school when I was 5, graduated high school at 17, graduated college at 21. But when I was 17, 2 days out of high school, I was in that mindset of I've got to get the fuck out of Gibsonia, Pennsylvania. I just did not want to be in Gibsonia, Pennsylvania, the only place I knew that I had ever been besides Gibsonia, Pennsylvania was Ocean City, New Jersey. That's the only place I'd ever been.
This is where the sound effect goes.
So it's just so fascinating as I look back because my mother, so at the time I was 17, my mom was 47, younger than me now, as we know.
Yeah, you're 60.
And she drove me. Now, at that time, for some reason, it took 8 hours to get to Ocean City. Now it takes like 5 hours. I don't know why it took so long, but at the time...
You were driving a Model T. That's how old you are.
We get to Los Angeles. We get to Ocean City, New Jersey. I'm 17. And she and I stay in this guest house while I'm going to find a place to live, okay? I end up living in the guest house in the attic with the maid of the guest house for $22 a week, okay? My mom stays in Ocean City with me for 4 days. She turns around and leaves. I got $60 in my pocket. $60. There wasn't even like ATM cards back then, let alone I didn't have a credit card. I didn't have a phone. There was no cell phones. So I got $60 and I'm sharing a room with a maid where the bathroom is two levels down and the shower is outside. I have to shower outside. But I'm a block from the beach. And so here I am, my 17-year-old little self, and I get a job. And actually, I talked about this job on a recent podcast because remember, it was the worst job I ever had.
Did it involve taffy? No,
it wasn't with taffy. Although I see where you're thinking saltwater taffy, Ocean City.
I thought you had a job about taffy. No.
This was a job where I was going to be a lifeguard in the afternoon and be a maid in the morning. So, like, I'm a maid and then
nice.
I'm a lifeguard.
Yeah, that's good.
And I'm 17. I've got like maybe $50. Okay. No. I'm eating at smorgasbords. Is that how you say it? Smorgasbord?
Yeah, that's
very
correct,
popular in Ocean City for whatever reason. I'm eating
because,
at those.
Oh, I can tell you exactly why.
Day.
Because people had brought their 4-6 kids like your parents, and it's like, I'm going to bring I can't afford to feed these kids
that's
individual
it.
Meals, and I don't want to listen to their fucking ordering off a menu. We're going to a smorgasbord. You pigs just eat everything. And don't list bother me the rest of the day.
So that's what I would do is I would eat as much as I could, only every other day, though. Anyway, so I'm trying to work at this place as a maid. And they tell me how to clean this bathroom. And then they leave. And I'm there with this scrub brush and this toilet and a bathtub. And this is, like, not working for me. This is not happening. And I quit, which I felt really good about. Because look at me, I'm all grown up, 17, I quit a job. How about that?
Yeah.
And anyway, I went up to the boardwalk and I got a job at Core Brothers Frozen Custard. Anybody out there who's ever been up there on the boardwalk in Ocean City knows about Core Brothers. And I worked all summer serving ice cream. So now my smorgasbord diet was compensated with ice cream.
Nice.
I ate ice cream 3 meals a day. I ate the cones like it was a wheat product, like I could get some fiber out of the cones. And then I would go to the smorgasbord. So I was 17. I was super poor, but I had left home. How about that?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I wonder if your mom was like, she'll call me in a week and I'll come and get her. Or did she really be like, okay, bye. I think she said, okay, bye, because you were the sixth.
Exactly.
You were the youngest of six.
Their hands of me. Yeah. Because when you have six children, any excitement you had for the first, second, third, fourth, fifth child is now like, just get the fuck out, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's too many kids.
Well, it's kind of like, it's like you don't want to. Yeah. By the time, if you were the first child and you only had one child, I'd be like, oh, who knows what terrible thing could happen. But you realize like 5 kids left the house already.
They'll
be fine.
Yeah, they're all
living. They'll be fine. They're alive. She'll be fine.
And anyway, I did that for 2 summers. The second summer, I did end up being a lifeguard, but I only had a lifeguard. I didn't have to clean.
I don't think you did, but did you? You sound like you should have been very fat. You're eating nothing but smorgasbords and ice cream.
You know, Hannes, never been super overweight.
Yeah. I think you're lucky that way.
I guess you are fortunate that way.
You were probably all the cocaine that you're... Oh, wait, you couldn't afford cocaine yet.
No, that was in the 80s. This was in the 80s, too. Listen, Hannes, honestly, please. You keep forgetting that everybody did cocaine in the 80s. I mean, literally, everybody was doing cocaine.
Yeah, I'm probably the only person who didn't do cocaine in the 80s.
Or at least for a small period. I'm not saying everybody had an addiction. Or everybody did it all the time, but it seems like if you even drank a beer or you ever smoked a joint, you also did coke. If you were alive in the 80s, I'm just saying.
No. I didn't. But what's sad and pathetic is sometimes I'll be talking to the 20-year-olds I work with. I'll pretend I did, just to be cool.
That's awesome.
I'll be like, back when every glass countertop was covered in cocaine in every comedy club, I remember. And I'm like, I don't want to tell them I was. That wasn't me. I was the guy who was like, could I have a lime in my Diet Coke?
Hannes, how old were you when you left home, as it were? Like, when did you... I feel like I was 17 and I still went back home now and then, but I had left home.
I left Milwaukee. Well, no, I went to college in Milwaukee for 2 years after high school, and then I left and went to college in Madison. But I didn't leave, I didn't think that I had left home until I left the city of Milwaukee, and I was 29 when that happened. It should have been much sooner, but that's just
the
way
it goes. You know
what,
though? Like, any of our listeners out there, and anybody's even thinking of maybe branching out or leaving their hometown or, just changing up their environment, I say do that.
Yeah,
no matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how old you are, because these are the only days you have left. You know what I mean? If you have turned over the hourglass, you're seeing that sand fall, right? This is deep, I know.
I can't help but all I'm thinking about is the Wizard of Oz.
You ought to do that. It's not really as scary as you think, because everywhere
you know
you live,
leave. And if you're supposed to go back, then you'll go back.
But everybody has water. Everybody has pants. Everybody wants the same things. It's not that complicated.
Everybody has pants. That's our new slogan here at Storyworthy.
We're at Storyworthy.
Everybody has pants, yes.
All right, you guys. Hey, listen, before we bring up our storyteller, I did want to mention that if you'd
No pants on this guy.
He has no pants on. That's exactly right. If you'd like to support Storyworthy, that would be terrific. And here's what you can do. Head on over to storyworthypodcast.com, and there you'll find a couple of things. Hannes, tell them.
Well, you can click on a direct donate button. You can click on the Amazon ad. You can buy things on Amazon, and we get a little taste.
Yeah, so
it
you can donate you through Patreon. That's what we're doing now.
Yeah, go to Patreon. Yeah, go. You'll see a little video. You click on that. You can go to patreon.com/storyworthy. It'll take you right there. And consider helping us out with a monthly gift of like $2, $3, $4, $5 a month. You can afford it.
Yeah,
all right.
$5 a month.
You can afford.
Like
you have a computer.
Coffee.
You're downloading this right now. Seriously, the way the world exists is. Money needs to come in.
So I really
we're not
like
making
this,
a profit.
I really like this Patreon ad, Hannes, because it's not like a Kickstarter where you're trying to get money together to actually start a project or fund a project.
It's ongoing.
Patreon is an ongoing way that you can be involved with our podcast and be a patron of Storyworthy. And so, again, go over to storyworthypodcast.com. You can just click right on the Patreon ad, and it'll all work. It'll just fall together.
There'll be actually you put in 3D glasses, and a hand comes out of the screen.
That's right.
And takes your wallet.
And you don't have to leave home for that at all.
No. And you don't have to wear pants.
No.
Unlike
exactly
us.
Exactly right. It all comes around.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. Follow us on Twitter as well, @Storyworthy. We'd appreciate that. And if you have any questions or comments, go ahead and email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com.
Or like our Facebook page. Put comments on there.
Yeah, why not? All right, you guys. Wherever you are, stay tuned, because Hal Rail is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have actress, writer, producer Sabrina Gennarino.
And I'll be talking about the time I was an asshole.
That's next time on Storyworthy, motherfuckers.
Hello, this is Kermit the Frog, your roving Sesame Street reporter, reporting right here, right now, live for Storyworthy. Yay! It's got Hal Rail.
And we're back. We have left the Ice House, one of the oldest comedy clubs in Los Angeles area, and we're now at Flappers in Burbank, one of the newest comedy clubs in Los Angeles.
That place is doing very well.
Flappers is quite a nice place. They're very nice people. It's very confusing.
It's very confusing because they're kind to comedians.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I don't understand. It's like I'm waiting for them. Like it's a trick. Like, like a horror movie where they're trying to get me into a show and then they're going to kill me.
I know.
They're
going like,
to do experiments on me and take
my
organs.
Oh, hi there, Hannes. Would you like some water before you go on stage?
Yeah. It's like, what? Huh?
Are you being nice to me? Yeah. It's the absolute opposite of the Comedy Store.
Yeah, the Comedy Store is
black hole of death.
A black hole of death, exactly.
All right, you guys, Hal Rail is here right now. He's a voiceover actor who has done many, many roles for both animated series and live-action movies, including the new Batman adventure, Sonic the Hedgehog, Pound Puppies, which I just like to say, Pound Puppies.
Pound Puppies.
SWAT Cats, The Radical Squadron.
Well, SWAT Cats and Pound Puppies, a lot of animal violence going on in this resume.
Transformers and Predator Creature in Predator 2. And the live action in the live action film The Ghoulies 2, he was the voices for all the Ghoulies.
Really?
I know.
All of them, even Bob Ghouli.
All right, you guys, you can find him online at HalRail.com. So folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Hal Rail.
Wow. Thank you guys very much. I'm Hal Rail. I'm an audio savant. I came here to talk about time to leave home. And for some people, that's kind of a risky thing. For me, it was time. And here's how I knew how. Now, in 1955, television was born, Social Security was born, and I was born. Now, in 1956, my dad died. And he left me alone with my mom and my three sisters and a half-brother who left when I was three. Television was my journey out. It was everything I wanted, including the fact that everybody told me, you're the man of the house now. So when you're the man of the house and you're between three and four, and you find out that there's a Cuban Missile Crisis going on and that you are the man of the house. And it's time now because the communists are going to march across Indiana at any time. So what do? You hide piano legs up in the attic of the garage. Because you know piano legs will thwart the Russians. And ain't nothing like piano legs. Ask the King of England. At any rate, at age four, I began to realize that I could speak to animals. Actually, all I did was mimic them, but they responded. For instance, a horse. Well, and then you got the squirrel. Little tiny critics like that. And a parrot. Pretty bird, pretty bird. Or a hog. Or you can just call the pigs. These are all things that I got to know, plus a donkey bray. Now, a donkey bray takes technique. This is where you have to hold your lips and do something different. So you're going like, you're going. Now, you can't see what I'm doing, but if you saw it, it's weird. Now, I wasn't trying to build an arc or anything. I'm a cartoon guy. I was just building a stable of sounds. And this is how I tuned in. See how I use that? I made it up as I went along. I am who I am, as Popeye would say. I am who I am. Now, you know how the shirt has buttons and they go rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief, doctor, lawyer, Indian chief? Well, none of those buttons is about being a voice guy. None of those buttons is about what to do when you want to learn how to make things funny. I mean, also, I have to say, what the hell is that? Of all of them, I'd want to be the Indian chief. Wouldn't you? I mean, think about it. I could be a lawyer, but I'd rather be an Indian chief. How? Don't ask me. Now, again, I'm a voice guy. I follow my craft, and my craft is my passion. Eventually, I learned that certain sounds lent themselves to other sounds. How a parrot can become a pirate, and oftentimes together. Arr, there we go now, Polly. Rawr, Polly, Polly. It's using the same part of the voice. Arr, and rawr, arr. Now, then you go Roy Orbison and how he becomes the predator. Thank you, Peter Cullen. The predator is. And Roy Orbison is. Now, you can also say the same thing about Bob Hope whenever he saw a pretty girl. You know, but my whole thing is like, other voices lend themselves. You don't remember because you are young, young weens out there in the world. But there was a fellow by the name of Edward R. Murrow, and he did all these things in World War II where it was like, the angry snap of anti-aircraft is all around me as I stand and hear Hitler's ruthless
Luftwaffe, fly over my head. Luftwaffe, say that three times, and then put your head in your pillow and say goodnight. Now, you can take that, and then you can also move it back, and you've got,
this is a fellow by the name of Walter Cronkite, and when I was growing up, I presented only the news. And now we take you back to the 21st century, already in progress.
Now, here's something else. Did you know that Anthony Newley is actually David Bowie?
Silent chance at evening, you may meet a stranger. Ground control to Major Tom.
Convinced? Well, maybe not. Well, at any rate, how about Mason Adams and Casey Kasem?
This is Smuckers, and with a name like Smuckers, it's gotta be good. And now we'd like to do a long-distance dedication. From our friends in Florida to our friends in San Francisco.
Now, the voices I grew up on television and movies were merging through cartoons for me into voices that future generations will emulate and never even know where they came from. Now, all of this comes back to one thing, which is survival of the fittest. Now, that brings me back to Indiana. In 1974, I had a job between my freshman and sophomore year in college working for Asgrow Seed Corn Company in Oxford, Indiana. Now, you can imagine all the potential in a job like that. I was known for doing impersonations, and two of my standouts at the time were Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali. Now, a big mucky muck from Des Moines was in town, and they wanted to impress him a little bit, so they brought me into the side barn. Already, I knew things were looking up. They bring me in, and they say, hey, do your Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali for him. So I go, hello again, everyone. This is Howard Cosell speaking of sports. Beside me, Muhammad Ali.
Dance like a butterfly, float like a bee. I'm the greatest could be. I stand in the corner. I motions them in. And when I start punching, that's when I begin. I'm the greatest could be. I'm the one and the only Ali.
Wise words woven poetically in prolific perfection by the surreptitious soothsayer of sarcastic cynicism. Pugnacious as that may sound, my friend Muhammad Ali.
Well, the guy looks at me and he says,
say that something. Why don't you take that voice and that broom, go out and sweep that grain bin? Tell ya, no respect at all. Felt like bullseye on a target practice. A few years later, I was a junior in college, and happy to be a junior, and even happier to be a senior. Anyway, I went to Ball State University, which is a much gooder school than a lot of others is. I drove an hour each way to get to Indianapolis, Indiana, and put myself through school working at TGI Fridays. Now, you don't know this because you're listening on a different day, but today is Friday. And on today, in 1977... everybody would be at TGI Fridays. And it was really something, not just TGI Deep Fridays. In fact, it was the hottest singles bar in Indianapolis and in most every other major town around the country. And people used to frequent Fridays in every other city they found themselves in because good times could be had and good-looking girls were hanging out. And the drinks were humongous. I mean, a regular martini was 3 ounces. And we had specials on kamikazes and Long Island iced teas, sometimes at 50 cents each. Trust me, this was the impetus for Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. Now, I was big on offering coffee, even though the powers that be frowned on anything free, and we had to take lie detector tests, which was a drag. But I gave coffee away anyway because I thought, you know, better that than a DUI. Anyway, behind the bar was a perfect place for me to do impersonations. And it wasn't long before advertising discovered me, and I was doing Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali all over for car dealers all over the country. Anyway, my major in college was telecommunications, and I thrived on any and all attention I could muster. Now, shortly after I graduated from Ball U, a much better school than yours is, I'm assuring you. Now, this was in 1977, and I was doing great. I had an apartment, I had a job, I had money in the bank, and I was dating some pretty great women who wanted to remain single. It was the 70s, and if you missed it, you missed it. Anyway, my mindset at the time was just enjoy yourself. You put yourself through college. Now it's time to eat, drink, and meet Mary. And then it happened. John Lennon said, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. And
He is so right. Before my shift one December day in 1977, a manager comes up to me and asked me if I'd be interested in joining the traveling team that went around the country opening new TGI Fridays in cities across the USA. Now, I thought, ooh, my first thought was my family's here. I mean, even my extended family, all my friends, my fraternity brothers are here. My father's grave is here. I kind of balked at the moment and thought, I don't see how I could do this. Then later that night, that very night, the manager called me over to a table on the upper deck just above the bar. And the bar in those days was a square in the middle of the room. And a big mucky muck from TGI Fridays, Dallas, was there. And the manager wanted me to do my Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali for him. Well, I no sooner started than he held out a Bic lighter. And he lit my beard on fire, saying, I always wanted to burn Howard Cosell. Well, the manager and I put it out immediately before I was burnt. But the left side of my face was, well, have you ever put hair to a flame? It goes quick. At any rate, I shaved off half of my beard on the left side and kept my beard on the right side. I used to take the order on one side and then deliver the drink on the other. And there were even people who said, what happened to the other guy? So, you know, just add liquor and watch the fun. At any rate, that was what made me leave home. Go out and get in the business in a world where that type of reaction is just the tip of the iceberg, where they burn your beard. But I figured I'd rather hear that, any no from Hollywood, than another schmuck in Indiana. So I decided I had nothing to keep me there and only adventure out there. Of course, I think the thing that really was the impetus for it was in The Lord of the Rings, actually in The Hobbit, when Bilbo climbs the tree in the middle of Mirkwood to find the light, and he climbs to the very top branches, and he looks out and he gazes out over the top branches, and there's the light. And not only that, there's these beautiful butterflies just floating above the green waft of the forests of Mirkwood, something that's lost to the darkness down below where they found themselves traveling. And I realized if I didn't leave home, if I didn't go out into this world, I'd never see those butterflies. I'd never see that light. I'd never see the sights that are waiting for me out there. And I don't know how I knew that it was the right thing. I always kind of trust my gut. It's really been the best voice I've had all of my life, and I don't know how many of you out there feel that way, but I like to think that that's kind of the conscience of your being, and that you know in your gut if you're doing right or wrong, and that's the kind of stuff that haunts you in your dreams. But I thought, no matter what, I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to pursue my dream. Now, reality is much different than a dream, and there's nothing like going out into reality to help you define where the dream shakes hands with reality and drops away. Which brings us to Hollywood. When Thomas Edison was asked how he chanced upon the electric light bulb, his response was, "Chance favors a prepared mind." If you get nothing out of this broadcast with my story at all, other than the fact that you have to just not let those bastards wear you down, you have to go out and pursue that which is in your gut, because that which is in your gut is your dream. It's your passion. It's why you're here. And if that takes you outside the confines of everything else that everybody knows as normalcy, or of what everybody else perceives as the thing to do, the right thing to do, then you just need to do like Thoreau and just follow the beat of your own drummer and march out there and find what fate has for you. For me, I spent 20 years away from this town raising a little girl, and I know that being a father is the greatest role I'll ever play in this world. But I'm here because I want to play so many other things. I have played Transformers, and I've been G.I. Joe, and I've been Miss Piggy. Hello, this is Miss Piggy. And Gonzo the Great. Wow, skin. Look at that. It bends.
and Anama.
But I'm back in Hollywood because this is where it all is. And I'm back because this is what I do, and this is who I am. And I left home when it was time. I encourage you to do the same thing. It's called tribal unity. You find people who think the way you think, act the way you act, and believe the way you believe. And those are your people. You belong among them. Don't let anything stop you.
It's like you just did like a motivational speech for, it's like you were doing a commencement speech.
I will buy this condo.
Yeah, I mean, honestly.
You guys know how hard it was for me to sit here and listen to you guys do this stuff back and forth.
Yeah, exactly.
And you bring a voice guy into a studio and say, now don't say anything.
I know. You're like, they, over there just like, help me. Rubbing the scars on his arm. Yeah, like, man, I need it, man.
Alan Dinehart Jr. used to do this thing. We did this show called Glow Friends, and there were like 30 people in this cast, and it was wonderful, just great names and wonderful people. But try to keep 30 class clowns
quiet
in
right.
a room. Alan Dinehart Jr., wherever you are.
Okay, so Hal, it's interesting. So you were in Denver for 20 years,
yeah,
and now you just came back to Hollywood, and it's almost like...
Actually, Burbank. I'm in Media City.
It's almost like...
it's Hollywood adjacent.
It's not so much time to leave home. It was almost time to go home for you this last time.
Well, yeah, but I also left home. I mean, we had a wonderful home.
You mean in Indiana?
Well, in Indiana originally, but I thought you were talking about coming here from Colorado.
Or came back again.
So you're talking about leaving Colorado.
Right.
But Colorado was home.
I see.
And but I had to leave home once again.
So you did it twice.
Well, you know, we all go through different stages in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I rose to the very creme de la creme of the Hollywood voiceover community.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked away for 20 years to be a father and raise my daughter. Where I thought Time Warner was there and John Malone with TCI. And I assumed, making an ass out of me only, that this whole technological thing and what they call the digital frontier
mm-hmm.
would ensconce its way into Colorado. It did, but, you know, only with bean counters, and it wasn't a way to make a living.
But you can be a voiceover artist anywhere. But you're talking about maybe...
Oh,
you're talking about
we
more
did The
being
Simpsons
in,
out of our house.
Of course. So
yeah.
You're talking about more being in the industry, specifically the animation industry, and that is definitely in Hollywood, California.
Right. I was in San Francisco. I had cancer when mm-hmm. I was 26, and it took me about 3 years to get the health okay from my
and
doctor.
And you're a survivor?
I'm a survivor.
Congratulations.
33
so
years.
Am I.
Thank you very much.
Years,
yeah.
Thank you.
And it turns your life around.
I think that's also a big part of it is when you go through a serious illness, it definitely changes your mindset as to what you worry about, who you worry about disappointing.
And the order of priorities.
The order of priorities. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because if you want to talk about leaving home, I mean, I left home when I was talking earlier about going to Ocean City, New Jersey, but then I always went back to Pittsburgh, but I was a flight attendant. So I felt like I was always still leaving.
Serving ice cream?
That's exactly right. No, but I was always still leaving. And then finally, I still couldn't get far enough away. So I went to the Peace Corps. And it wasn't until I got diagnosed with cancer in the Peace Corps that finally I got my health back. And then I left home at 31 and came to Los Angeles, which is where my people were. But it's very funny that you're saying all of this, because just because you leave where you are doesn't mean you necessarily find your people. But
well,
you have to try.
Oh, you have to try. And for me personally, when we talk about the aspect of going through something like cancer and how that can, you know, let's say, beat the carpet of all the old dust. You had that moment where your mother walked, said, okay, I'm leaving, and you were 17, and you were mm-hmm. you decided you wanted to be on your own. I went from 170 pounds to 122 pounds in a matter of 5 weeks.
Wow.
And I was walked to the plane, and I was told, you know, you got to be a bird. You got to fly. You got to make
Wait,
your
you,
own
what
nest.
What are you talking
you
about? What do you mean? What plane? What are you talking about?
Well,
metaphorically, he was.
No,
like,
I was literally walked to the plane where I went. I went home for a recoup, and then I was walked to the plane, and they said, "You got to be like a bird." My mom, you know, my father died when I was a year old, so she was pretty tough, and it was like, you know.
How long did you take? You know, did it take to get
this
well?
This was 3 weeks after the surgery.
Oh, I see. So you didn't go through chemo there?
No, I went through. This was in 1981 in San Francisco, and I was on public disability and all this stuff, so I got like experimental stuff. I drank radioactive barium and things like that.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was. You know,
So you're saying though that 3 weeks after you had your surgery for cancer, that your mom said you need to go out again. Is that what you're saying?
No, I came home and I was.
Oh, I see. You went. Back
I came
to Indiana.
Home after that for a little recoup. And then she walked me to the plane and said, okay, you know, you got to be like a bird.
Time to go again.
It's time for you to go and have your own nest.
So you love being back in Los Angeles now, right?
I do. I'm happier than a pig in a puddle.
Activity. There's stuff going on all the
time. Well, it's possibility. And more than that, it's like probability.
Yeah.
Because of the sheer volume of things that are going on in all the different aspects of what telecommunications and communications has become in the digital age. I was out there fighting and learning that, you know, that all of this is possible. And people like my daughter trained on Mac all of her life, and she makes her own videos and does her own things. The other day she set up her computer and she set up her television, and she used her computer as a prompter on her television to do an on-camera thing for one of her classes at CSU.
Yeah, a webinar. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
But she wired it all herself.
Yeah,
from
isn't
things that,
amazing?
That she learned from me in the studio.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
You've passing all that down
I'm
to her.
I'm passing wires down.
Let me ask you, who were your animation mentors anyway?
Dawes Butler is someone that I trained with, and he was Yogi Bear and Huckleberry Hound.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, and I also, Jim Henson. I was able to fly to New York and work with Jim Henson and Frank Oz. Gordon Hunt.
Did you work on the Muppets?
I actually, what happened was I saw... Rainbow Connection, first Muppet movie. Mm-hmm. I had a reel-to-reel. I did...
What's that mean, I had a reel-to-reel?
A reel-to-reel is a recorder.
Oh, I see. You had a recording of the Muppet. Because this is like...
No. I had a reel-to-reel recorder.
You might remember, there was a thing called tape at
Yes, this was a TAC-2340 four-channel quarter-inch that had the ability for me to be able to lay simul-sync down.
I see. So this is like the late 70s?
Almost Beatles, but without any kind of artistry.
So this is the late 70s?
Yeah. I had a reel-to-reel, and I recorded myself doing the Muppets, and I sent it to the Muppets, and 12 years later, they called me in with 50 other people called in from around the world to go to New York and be a Muppet.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, so you would do... like Miss Piggy or Animal when Frank got, like for the animation
No.
Guys didn't want
for the animation show.
Not you know he would do it for the movies
he still does it. Yeah
like but, Mike Myers does Shrek in the movies I happen to know the guy who does Shrek every time Mike Myers doesn't want to
doesn't
do it
want the gig.
If you hear it on a show or a commercial or something it's not Mike Myers it's the guy who sounds exactly like Mike Myers doing Shrek
once again the button on the shirt that's missing. The voice over button.
And so you do a lot of games now, right? That's a big part of the voiceover.
That's a big part
industry.
Of it, yeah. But I do so. Yeah, I mean, be who you are, do what you do. With the evolving technologies, we all know that there's a guy over there right now in this room that
Scott Christopher.
Yes, Scott Christopher. And he has what? That's a laptop that he's doing this show on.
Right.
And we have, you know, the rest is like solid state. Technology with the mics and the sound and the processing. You got to have a little bit of that too. But this is where the world has gone.
Right. It's on a consumer level now to produce
anything. I was the voice of the HAL 9000 in working with Keir DeLay in New York, and I was in Los Angeles. And
oh, that's awesome.
There was an agency in Chicago and another agency in Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all uplinked and downlinked through satellite. And the hardest part was for Keir DeLay, who was Dave, to figure out that I'm Hal and I'm also playing Hal.
Oh, yes. And now, what was this for?
Oh, this was for a series of ads using Keir and I.
Okay.
But I also did the HAL 9000 at Universal Studios.
Oh, okay.
And
okay,
Alfred Hitchcock.
Good evening.
Now, you almost remind me a little bit of a Phil Hartman, able to do so many voices.
Well, thank you very much.
Also,
you know, that's just probably one of the nicest things I've heard.
Now you sound like,
exactly. Phil McClure.
Phil McClure.
Maybe you remember me from such voices as Phil McClure.
Troy McClure.
Troy McClure.
Well, I was trying to throw you off.
Well, actually, Phil McClure is his brother.
Yeah, that's
and
my
And he used to talk about how his voices, he was able to do them by deciding where the voice lie in the mouth. Was it in the front of the mouth, the middle of the mouth, back in the throat? And so there's all these techniques.
Oh, yeah. Your body is just like any other instrument. You have to learn how to play the nose.
But did somebody teach you
know, because you never know if the Dan Ryan's going to be blacked up and you got to have a brat.
Did you teach yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Or did you
just self-taught.
From listening?
No, just from
all
listening.
From listening.
You know, my father, from what I understand, used to listen to two different radios at the same time.
Interesting.
One with a ball game and the other with some kind of classical music on.
How did he die? He must have been very young.
Brain, bone, and lung cancer. He was 46.
So sorry. Isn't that amazing? Wow.
Yeah, his father died when he was 7.
Oh, isn't that crazy?
And you're still around, so that's pretty good.
So I'm setting the record here.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Every day you're setting a new record.
You did characters like G.I. Joe and Predator, and how did those roles, those types of roles, prepare you for the gaming industry that now you find yourself in?
Well,
because that industry didn't exist then.
No, but it did with me from the standpoint of listening to my daughter in the other room all the time while I was busy working on other things.
I see. Yeah.
The difference is that when you're doing a game, you are 99 out of 100 times alone in the room because you need to be able to do for whatever reaction the player makes, you have to have an equal reaction for any possibility. So you're doing a lot of shouting, you're doing a lot of grunting, you're doing a lot of over the top, down here. All right, we gotta be good. Somebody's gotta get the ammo over there. Who can do it? Sarge, I'm stupid. I'll do it. You go first.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, we have another friend of the show named Bill Ratner, who's a voiceover
Billy
guy.
Ratner and I, yeah.
And
he was. We did
tremendous.
A G.I. Joe together.
Yes, that's
he is
right.
The voice of Storyworthy. He announced he is the announcement tomorrow.
He is the voice of so many things.
And he's a wonderful guy as
well.
Oh,
he's a wonderful guy.
So you remind me so much of him. And I love this
idea.
You
have to have facial hair to do voiceover. This is my question, because you and Bill both have the goatee.
Yeah. Oh, do we? I haven't seen Bill in some time.
Last time I
saw him, he was shaving.
Thomas Edison said, chance
favors a prepared mind.
So it's almost like opportunity needs to meet the preparedness.
Yeah.
If the opportunity comes and you are not prepared.
If you don't take lessons, if you don't study your craft, if you don't put in the time and the energies to perfect your voice or whatever it is you're doing, even if you're playing the guitar, if you don't put the time learning the chords and getting the dexterity together, then you're going to meet a really low glass ceiling of limitations.
Yes. And so if you were to say to folks out there, you're telling kids or however old they are, you know, leave home, leave the comforts of your comfort zone, go out and do what you always wanted to do. And then you would say to them, and the worst case scenario is?
Worst case scenario is that you will be broke and you will be at this point where you will think to yourself, do I whore? Do I beg for change underneath the overpass? Or do I put my nose to the grindstone and figure out what the next thing is?
Yeah.
But if you put all of your energies into a specific avenue, this is what I'm saying. You know, above all things, try to keep a roof over your head at all times. The other thing is clothes on your back. And the other thing is shoes on your feet.
Yes.
And food in your belly.
Housing, warmth.
Housing, food. Warmth, and love as much as you can find or muster.
Or pay for.
That's mustering.
Yeah, always.
But you can catch up later.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Why did TGIF, that restaurant, first of all, the menu was like half inch thick, so how could they be good at making everything? That can't be.
Because everything had a ton of butter in it. It's kind of like the Kachisaki factory today.
Yeah, it's
everything
like,
is drowning in
do
butter.
Do you like flavor? Because we got flavor. We got fat, we got butter, we got deep fry, we got flavor. How about big food? You like big food?
Yeah.
How about a slab of roast beef as thick as your head? We got that.
I don't understand that. And then they would have those mixed drinks, those Long Island iced teas and all those clear alcohols they would put together with like a sweet juice.
But you know, when you're getting off work at 5 and the freeway's full and you're going to go, I'm going to kill an hour and a half, and then I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You know, honestly,
sorry, don't do that.
So they would, it would just be as if you go to a restaurant, what would you like to drink? Oh, I'll have a Long Island iced tea.
Great.
Like, what?
Well, it's on special for 50 cents. I'd be a fool to pass that up.
Yeah, I can't afford not to get drunk.
Of course, they weren't 12 ounces. So they were like these little four-ounce
Yeah, I know,
things,
but people, you know, and this was Indianapolis, and I'm from Milwaukee. It's like, I know these people. Those people are drinking a lot. A lot. And yeah, it was always the...
It gets cold.
All TGI Fridays looked... They still do. I guess they're just not quite as ubiquitous as they used to be. They all looked exactly the same. They had the square bar in the mm-hmm. center of the restaurant.
Now, the difference was in those days before it was sold out to corporate, you know, you were encouraged to be an individual. And it was you as an individual that brought in people that wanted to be in your station.
I'm sure they don't go for that anymore.
They don't go for that. Everybody's just a red.
By the way, I am ashamed to say that I have eaten in a TGI Fridays in Berlin, Germany. And I could have been anywhere in America.
Because they put all that stuff on the walls.
All the stuff, they shipped over all the license plates and all the crap.
You passed over the Wiener Schnitzel?
Yeah. No, there's a place called Wienerwald. Which is a which sounds now what is
Wienerwald? It means the world of Wieners.
Right, it sounds like it means Wiener World, but it actually means Vienna Woods.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wiener means Viennese, and Wald is wood. So it's if I told you I was going to a restaurant called the Vienna Woods, you'd be like, God, that sounds awesome. I'm going to Wienerwald. It's like, what are you, an asshole? I don't think so.
No, but I can bring you one back from there.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Hal, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
I would love to.
It can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Vacation. My favorite vacation is going to Italy. I have friends in Venice, and they have a flat that they let us stay in for free. In fact, yesterday they were in town, and I took them to 20th Century Fox with my wife, and they had lunch at the commissary, and then we walked along Venice Beach, and they agreed Venice Beach is very much different than Venice, Italy. It is completely different, and it smells different too. At any rate, I love Italy because you can sit there with somebody and you can say, like, for instance, my wife was talking about The Simpsons and someone said, I don't like that show. I don't let my family watch it. And then she says, well, you know, it's like the commedia dell'arte. Oh, it's just making fun of the higher ups. You know, it's just the gentry. Then I will look for it and I will investigate it myself.
All right.
And I thought, you know, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's Italian. Flexible in the end. They're very flexible.
Yes, their hands are flexible, too.
But Venice down here in Southern California does have the canals like Venice, Italy. And so maybe that's, I mean, I know there's a correlation.
No, that was why they called it that.
That is a correlation, right?
But it's like the Venice canals are like the whole city is really sinking, whereas the canals in Venice, California are about 2 feet deep.
Yeah.
I see.
They're duck swamps.
Yeah.
Now, I've been to Venice, Italy, and it's just overrun by cats. I remember that.
No.
Cats everywhere in Venice, Italy.
That's so funny because I've been there probably 4 times, and I don't ever remember really seeing cats.
Of course, I saw a lot of cats and kittens when I was out swinging on the hot spots.
Yes, exactly.
Down at Lido
Beach.
Yeah,
there you're going down to the Lido. Hey, St. Mark's Square doing, baby.
Now, we got to wrap this up, but one of the reasons why people, I would think producers would hire you, Hal, is because it seems like you could just hire Hal Rail, and then you do the whole production with just one guy.
Well, you know, the gist of it all is when you're in the animation business is that you are paid to do 3 voices, and you need to have a thing called voice separation where it doesn't sound like the same person doing all those voices.
Mm-hmm.
Like for instance, when I did Back to the Future, they hired me as Einstein the dog.
Okay.
So I could... And then I could also play 65 other people that they went back into the past and into the future to meet. So, and Dan Castellaneta played Doc Brown on that show, and he's Homer Simpson. And so between the two of us, we had so much fun just jumping all over as different characters in the past, in the future.
Have you ever worked in, I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's when there's like a group of people, they're all voiceover actors, and they go around and they provide background.
Walla.
It's called a Walla?
Walla. Famous bit, Gregory Peck. I don't do Walla.
Okay, can you explain Walla to the people?
Sure. Walla is adding background effects. When you watch a television show, Everything is added that you're listening to after the fact.
Right.
They record the dialogue. You will come in and you will do something that is called looping. You will cover the tracks with your own voice, and they will then build the atmosphere around you.
So you could become...
Because if you need the car chase to be dominant, you can't have all this spatial awareness.
If there's people in a restaurant... The people, they
you want
to
have
extras,
everybody around.
You guys mime talking.
Yeah.
Do not say a word.
The extras are silent.
Yeah. Right.
They're not saying, don't try that.
If you could belong to a loop group, I think that's the word I was thinking of. It's called a loop group, and you become one of the, and that's like the most coveted job because you're just with a group of people and you go into these studios.
Rhubarb,
make no mistake, these are very professional people. There are people that specifically get called in to be that. Dr. Schwartz, in 2D, you have a code red. You
know, I think that's fascinating.
And also the white zone is, you know... They're
loading and unloading only. You want me to have an abortion?
Literally, there are people that have nothing but booklets of verbiage for them to be able to read, given any situation.
Okay, listen,
professional.
I know, right? I mean, these people are at the top of their game, and there's a reason why it's hard to break into.
And why do they have all that dialogue? Because chance...
Let
me look it up. Chance favors
a prepared
that's
mind.
Right.
That's right. But, hang on. Let me look through my 48 papers. Prepared mind.
Chance,
yes.
No memory.
A lady with the
knife.
I'm really happy you and your lovely wife, Maggie Roswell, are back here in Los Angeles. I'm so glad.
Or Burbank, whatever.
With your company, Roswell and Rail. That's your own voiceover company.
That is our own. Well, we have a studio called Audio R&R.
Audio R&R,
like Roswell and Rail.
Love that.
Yes. And basically, we write, voice, produce, create, deliver product to...
Whatever they need.
Whatever you need.
And if you hire guys like you, like Roswell and Rail, you're going to get the best product.
You know, I don't care what you say. There's a guy by name Jack Angel, great guy. And he wrote a book called Winning. And the bottom line is, his gist is that if you go up for a job, you didn't lose that job if you didn't get it because you're going up against the very best in the world.
Yes, it's true.
And you to even be considered are considered among them. Mm-hmm. And that's the way you have to take the hurt of being, you know,
that you're even in the game. In other words, that you're even in the game. Be
you're
happy
being
there.
Rejected,
being
but
success,
it's finding strength in rejection.
And being successful within, you want to be one of those usual suspects. That
you do. You want to be in that group that gets called in.
Right, exactly. All right, you guys, we got to wrap this up right about now. I'd like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including our new sound guy, Scott Christopher. Scott, I'm only going to call you the new guy for 3 months, if that's cool.
Fine by me.
Is that good?
Okay, just in time for there to be another guy.
And, of course, on behalf of Sean Merrick here at Sideshow Network and John Thomas
I've already
Thomas
forgotten him.
John
He's not in the room.
He's dead to me. John Thomas Griffith.
I close the iron door.
You know,
anybody?
He's the guy who wrote
20th century, 1939.
That's great. Okay. John Thomas Griffith, he's the guy that wrote our theme song, Storyworthy.
I close the iron door on him.
The name of the song isn't Storyworthy. It's called Follow Me. But
Follow
that's not
me,
the point.
Exactly.
See, now I'm getting
Follow Me as I close the iron door on you.
Exactly.
And on behalf of our guest tonight, Hal Rail, thank you so much.
Thank you so very
much. What a treat to have you in the studio. Thank you. And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host.
Hey, that's fun. I'm auditioning this is my other voice I can do. Do you like my voice differential?
Whatever
the fuck that was.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it the story worthy you can.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.